Hi guys, welcome back to the Nevermind Polly podcast. My name is Matt, I'm your host, and we chat to rock and metal bands from around the world. And today I'm sat down with a band who I've followed the trajectory of for a very, very long time. I'm talking to a guitar wizard, Mr. James Hewitt of Hacktivist. How are we doing, sir? How's things?
Things are great, thank you. Thanks for having me. Thank you for referring to me as a wizard.
Well, you know, so I don't play any instruments myself. Well, I played drums very poorly when I was a child, right? So to me, until not so long ago, should I say, like, to me, a guitar was five strings. And you, motherfucker, it's playing like seven or eight. It's like, do you know, you see the bass guitar and you're like, I want fucking four more of those. To me, you're a bit of a wizard. So there we go. As I said before we started, thank you for taking the time on this Thursday morning to chat to us. We are going to be talking all about everything Hacktivist. I had a lot of things to talk about going on in the camp at the moment. First and foremost, the new single, Crooks and Criminals. Talk to me about what's been going on the last few weeks into months. How's things looking in the Hacktivist camp? What's been going on?
Obviously, JJ joined the band as second vocalist a few months ago.
For sure.
We've been writing steadily. We were deciding whether to work on an album, whether to see what happened, you know, work on a few singles maybe. Mm-hmm. And we've just decided to right, what happens, we've taken some of the pressure off of ourselves of writing an album, and we're just going to be putting singles out. I mean, Crooks and Criminals was the first of a bunch to be finished that are now already, you know.
Yeah.
We're in a really good position musically in terms of what we have available, and we can, now being independent as well, we have a lot more control over these releases, which is... taking creative control back was something we all wanted to do. So absolutely. We all get to pick exactly which one we want to release.
Absolutely. And that's the thing as well. So first and foremost, I want to say, because some people would look at that and go, oh, they're independent, this, that, and that. I say props for being independent, because, you know, as a DIY aesthetic myself doing this, it is, you know, a lot of hard graft doing it DIY. But also, like you say, and I'm a big fan of an album, right? I'm a fan of an album, I'm a fan of listening front to back. But when you get singles like this one just drop out of, you know, seemingly nowhere, I know you're very busy behind the scenes, you've just said.
Yeah, of course.
Drops online, you're like, oh shit, like amazing. And I think that is kind of the way that kind of music industry is going, like people just like doing singles stuff and things like that and getting on playlists and things like that. But I think it's really cool. Like, I think it's really, really cool, because Hacktivist, to me, in terms of what I grew up with, like, so I'm talking like 2015, 2016, prior to you joining the band, they were like a really, really hot prospect. And it's like one of the most frustrating things as a music fan, like just as a fan of the band, of being like, why did they not just absolutely explode? Do you know what I mean? So seeing like these new singles and the new kind of resurgence, if you like, of kind of Hacktivist is kind of like, fuck yeah, I love this.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I have a background in music industry, so I completely understand the need to do albums. But I think it doesn't take a genius to see the way people consume music is changing.
Yeah.
I mean, even someone like myself, maybe even you, you know, we're not listening to music as much as we were, and we're not sitting down at home to maybe listen to music. It's part of our day when we're going for a walk or driving to work. Absolutely. And as much as I love listening to an album and still do, you know, from start to end, I think in the last couple of years, I've noticed bands releasing singles a lot more. I mean, there are bands that release two singles 2 days apart even. And I think that has changed the way the music industry is operating completely.
Yeah.
But some people still aren't catching up. I mean, there's nothing wrong with doing an album. Absolutely. I'd love to. But I think, especially with our situation, you know, we all live in different cities around the UK, a couple of hours away from each other, minimum. And we've all got very busy lives. We're in our 30s. You know, we want this band to succeed, but we have our own personal lives and careers to think of as well. So working on singles and putting stuff out every month for the foreseeable future just seemed like the better option.
Absolutely, absolutely. And like I say, it's credit to you for doing it that way, because like I say, I think from a creative standpoint as well, again, I've never made music, but I can kind of empathize with yourself and the band. If you would say, like you say, you work really, really hard for months on end, even a year on end, making an album, 10 tracks, whatever, you drop it, and then maybe like one or two songs are the ones that are the big hits, and the rest of them, which you're so proud of, kind of get myriaded in the album, and people don't listen to the full thing as a full thing. So it makes from a point of view from yourselves being like, cool, I want to shine a light on every single song that we've put blood, sweat, and tears into, to come to its fruition and get its full kind of day in the sun. So that makes perfect sense. I wanted to talk as well. When I get the opportunity to sit down with people like yourself, I like to take things right back to the very beginning, because I love to know where people's kind of musical inspiration, kind of where their love for music comes from. Because people like me and you, right? And I'm very much assuming, so please correct me if I'm wrong. But you're I'm seeing when you we live and die music, right? Music is everything. Yeah. So when I look at people who love film, I'm kind of like, I like film, but I'm not like die hard about film. So when people go to me, oh, I just sort of like music, and Ed Sheeran's all right or whatever, I'm like, what do you mean? Like, it's such an alien concept. So where did that kind of fire start for you? Was it friends, family? How did you kind of first, and when was the first time you picked up a guitar?
I've been playing guitar for maybe 20 years now. My
Sure.
dad played, very much just an at-home guitar player,
For sure.
but he loved the guitar, the aesthetic of the guitar. So he had probably six or seven, and I just loved picking them up and pretending I could play them, you know. I you know, maybe like you, like a lot of musicians, I'd imagine, grew up in a household that adored music.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wasn't into metal as a kid. I grew up having, for the first 5, 6 years of playing guitar, never playing a riff. I
Really? Oh, wow.
only wanted to play solos.
Okay, cool.
I
Nice.
grew up listening to Van Halen, Steve Vai, Joe Satriani in the 90s, and that shaped who I am today for sure.
Yeah,
I
amazing.
think having a completely different perspective about riff writing, obviously riffs are 99.9% of what hacktivists are doing. I find that helps. Obviously, later down the line, I did get into metal. I grew up with bands. It's funny, I was having this conversation yesterday. When I was a kid, I remember talking to my dad specifically and him saying whatever album it was, it might have been Kill 'Em All by Metallica, sorry. And he said, this came out 20 years ago, when I was a kid. And it's funny, I was listening to City of Evil by Avenged Sevenfold yesterday.
Yeah, for
And
sure.
that next year will be 20 years old. So I was putting myself in his shoes thinking, wow, 20 years isn't actually as long as it seemed
No,
back then.
absolutely.
This seemed like an ancient record when I was a kid. But albums like that, Avenged Sevenfold, Bullet and Trivium, those were the bands I was listening to in high school. They just do not seem ancient like the Metallicas and the Megadeths did.
I hate to break the awful truth. It's just as we're getting older. That's all. It's such a
Yeah, no,
horrible, horrible thing.
it really is.
When you realize I've kind of I don't like to kind of present my own dad. He's very self-deprecating, so I'm sure he won't mind. But I present him a bit like a boomer, that he just says boomer things. And I realize that I'm slowly morphing into him, and I'm like, I catch myself saying something. I'm like, fucking hell, I'm just like my dad. Fucking hell, I'm getting older.
I
It's
mean,
literally the
I was really blessed to have young parents. They grew up being, my best friends. I mean, it was my dad that got me into music. It was my mum that very much got me into live music.
For sure.
She snuck me out of school when I was 15 to go to my first gig. It
Amazing.
was Joe Satriani in London, and ever since I have just been in love with performing. And it's a bit of a cliche, but you're an actor. You walk on stage and you turn into this different person.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I
And
saw it first there,
Absolutely. It's something that we spoke briefly off air that I went to a gig last night. I went to go and see Dream State and Graphic Nature, and I've interviewed Jessie a couple of times on the podcast, and she's an absolute dear friend, and I'd never seen her perform live. And when we were talking on the podcast, she was like, yeah, like I just t and like I saw it in front, and I was like, fucking hell, like go on, like, do you know what I mean? And it is just this kind of like, you can be the most, just sort of straight up individual, like, you could have an office job, like you say, go to work 9 to 5, whatever. And then as soon as you're on set, you're just different person completely. It's almost like a Jekyll and Hyde, but in a good way, not in a kind of one way. I love that. Yeah, Joe Satriani is a hell of a start in terms of a first gig. Mine was Dragon Force in 2008, so I'm not sure who got the better end of that deal.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with Dragon Force, but just
No, absolutely not.
just saying. So you are number two of a new kind of segment. I've kind of rebranded the show after 4 years, right? So essentially, I'm going to ask you later on in the interview to ask a question to the next guest who's going to be on the show. So I had one before you, which is going to be out after you, I believe. So let me just get. So this is two of the people from a band called Assurance, and they would like to know this question. Okay, so I do know what it is. Don't worry, it's not. I did say it had to be sort of somewhat PG because I've got to like. Hang on.
Okay.
Hopefully this will work. Hang on.
I'm Joe from Assurance, and this is Ken from Assurance, and we would like to know what your favorite dinosaur is.
Did you
My
catch
favorite
that?
dinosaur.
Yeah, do you have a favorite diet? I mean, this is the like, so basically, I don't know how familiar you are with podcasts and whatnot, but Stephen Bartlett of Diary of a CEO does the very deep,
Yes,
meaningful
yeah.
question. I'm just like, what's your favorite dinosaur, James?
What's your favorite dinosaur? Yeah, no, I love it. It's certainly something I've not thought about in maybe 25 years.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Probably a pterodactyl. I'd love to be able to fly. I think that
That's
would be cool.
like a rogue shout as well, because my brain automatically goes to like T-Rex, maybe like Stegosaurus. Is that the one? My nephew is really into dinosaurs. He's three, so I should probably know better, but there we go. Love that. A pterodactyl. Absolutely love that. So let's get back to the band. Let's get back to Hacktivists, because Hacktivists are known for kind of a blend, a mixture of different flavors, different sounds and ideas. And I, like a lot of the fan base from day one, I love to know. And again, I apologize if I'm trying to spoil any magic, right? Because to me, you guys are magicians when you come up with these wonderful songs. So how does kind of the basic kind of framework of a song come to be for you guys? Is it a riff? Is it a lyrical idea? Is it a narrative? How does it all kind of come together? Does it work differently for each song? How does it all work for you?
Yeah, absolutely. It can be different for each song. I mean, Josh and Rich both come from more jazz inspired and theory based backgrounds than I do. So they can help me a lot when it comes to writing collaboratively. A lot of the time it can be a rhythmic idea I come up with. And yeah, I might come up with, said rhythmic idea at work or on my way home, and I'll, try and transcribe it really, really quickly and then loop it for a little bit and see what ideas come out of it. Sometimes it can be a melody or, a certain riff that does come into my head. Other times, Josh is really big into playing around with synths and like cool electronic stuff. A lot of our new stuff has come out of him sending those over to me, and I just put stuff on top to see what happens.
Yeah, for sure.
We work really collaboratively, even though we do live far away. We're as often as we can meeting up and going over ideas, which, as someone who's written on their own most of their musical life, it was a difficult change to make.
Yeah, of
You get
course.
it you get attached to ideas, and then you have to take that part out of your head that's saying protect this idea at all costs. People can have their own input, and that's how we come up with a lot. There are conversely songs like Planet Zero. Rich and I wrote in 20 minutes, wrote the whole thing in 20, other than the lyrics obviously, wrote the whole thing in 20 minutes during the album writing sessions. We just had this loop, and it, yeah, the song just happens.
Well, that's the thing. I want to say again, you're probably going to hear this a lot, but props to yourself for being honest, because that is something I always kind of ask bands, and it is a bit of a leading question. I go, so do you find it collaborative? Like, no, it's all a big collaborative thing. And it's not that I disbelieve them; I just don't believe the whole truth they're telling me. Where you're saying, well, actually, no. When I've written this thing in my bedroom, my flat, whatever, it's like, no, I really like this, and it's like, and you're having to present that to the rest of the band and being like, and they're like, yeah, this is cool, but maybe. Again, not a guitar guy, but like maybe change the octave or go this little way, and you're like, no, but I like it that way. And it is kind of, you know, being in a band, it is kind of like, you know, a brotherhood or a gang or whatever you want to label yourselves as. But also, you're all individuals who are massively creative, so it's kind of like, I want to like make sure that my particular thing, if it serves the song properly and you know, all encompassingly, you want to make sure that that is the best thing. So yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of reeling each other back in
For sure.
sometimes. You know, we've all got our quirks in what we want to do. I mean, mine would be trying to put four guitar solos in any one song, you know. And Josh has to pull back, you know. I think what the last album had maybe three on the entire album, so maybe For that's sure. a good compromise. But yeah, we've all got our own little quirks, and then Jay and JJ often write together as well.
For
they I find that chemistry they have is really, really great. They're really great at bouncing ideas off each other and wordplay, and then they often demo the vocals at home, and then I kind of cut them up and have my fun with them.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing as well. I'm mainly because I'm not that versed in terms of like knowledge about this subject, but the kind of, I think the world is in a bit of a shit place, right? Just politically, whatever, right? Because, and yeah, that's me putting it very, very lightly at 9 a.m. in the morning. But obviously, hacktivists don't shy away from that. So I kind of wanted to ask, how do you kind of go about, so you see something on the news or whatever, and you think, fuck this, fuck the Tories, fuck this, fuck that, whatever, right? How do you then morph that into a cohesive song that you can then, because that is the thing, you know, music can be a rallying cry of saying, you know, and we've seen it used completely the opposite way. You know, you're going to look at like Born in the USA being used in a Trump rally. It can be twisted and not be the way you intended. But how do you kind of pick, like, you know, a subject of difficulty and kind of tackle it and go, no, actually, I'm going to make this into a fucking rager?
Every song can be different. I mean, we're all socially aware. And, you know, we all know the state of the world, and we know we're in a privileged position where people are listening to our music. So without being preachy, every few songs we can put one out that's a bit of a call to arms. Rich is really great with this. He does a lot of research and helps the guys with their lyrical content.
For sure.
In particular, you know, kind of fact checking. You know, we do a lot of research to make sure we're not just saying, here's the problem. We're trying to say, here's the problem and this is how we fix it.
For sure. Absolutely.
I mean, Dogs of War was a good one for that. I think we spent hours together researching facts and figures for the music video.
Yeah.
To put together how big a problem this is. And it's so easy in pop culture to ignore these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with social media being the way you just shut your mind off, but no, it's great that we're in this position where we can maybe open people's eyes up a little bit or slightly nudge them in the right direction. Not every song, but we do our best.
Absolutely. And that's the thing as well. I think you kind of touched on social media as well. Like, it can be a bit of an echo chamber. If you're only following, you know, your friends and your people who you are, your political views or your social views align with, you don't ever break the status quo. So when, you know, something comes and kind of breaks that status quo of what you think is normal for your kind of worldview, have you had any kind of heat from that, from fans or from any just people on the internet? Because people are fucking dickheads on the internet. I'll say it so you don't have to.
I try not to look.
For sure. No, that's fair.
I mean, I think it can be a bit of a cliche. I like, don't get me wrong, I do scroll through the YouTube comments sometimes, but I really try hard not to.
Yeah, I get it.
There's always one.
It must be difficult because that's the thing. You, like you say, you put blood, sweat, money, tears into this thing, in this project, and then you see, you know, and it's never like constructive. It's always just, and I'm using a very, very broad kind of cliche of, you know, a 13-year-old sat in the mum's basement writing out some hate comment. And, you know, like, yeah. I think I'd almost, and again, being a content kind of person making podcasts and things, if it's constructive, it's kind of like, okay, I respect that because you've constructed a reasonable argument as to why you don't like it or whatever. But also, if you don't like, just scroll on. Like, there's so much stuff in the world, you can just go, yeah, it's fine, it's not for me. Like, do you know what I mean? That's one thing that I always try and do with this podcast is I get sent a lot of stuff and I'm very grateful for it. But if I'm not into it, I'm just going to just politely go, it's not for me. But there's loads of other places that will be for you, but I'm not going to sit here and go, yeah, it's amazing if I'm just not vibing with it. Do you know what I mean? So,
absolutely. I mean, I think it takes you back to when you're a teenager and you discover music and you think, oh, the music I listen to is better than that group of people.
For sure.
You know, I think some people maybe never move past it. There are even people I know still that work in press and go to gigs almost every day that talk so much trash about other bands, and I could just never do it. I mean, I did when I was a kid, of course I did.
Yeah.
But you move past it when it happens to you, you realize actually, even if I might not like that song, even if it seems simple, like no thought was put into it, something was put into it, and not for me to judge. You don't know if there's some hidden meaning or hidden feeling behind a certain song.
And also, it kind of, and I guess, again, you're being in a band, being a guitarist, I guess you can kind of maybe have this right, if there was ever any right, to kind of go, well, if you're in a band and you go, this is shit, and it's like, okay, you do better then. You learn an instrument for 20 odd years and you do better, because I'm just doing what I want to do and what we want to do. And if you don't like it, that's fine. But if you think you can do better, there's a guitar, have at it, son. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. I mean, I think the thing that makes it even harder to see is, more so than ever, people in bands these days are having to sacrifice so much to bring that art to people. You know, we live in a society where musicians aren't treated like they once were because of the financial state of the industry or whatever. You know, that's a whole other topic.
Yeah, for sure.
But we're all working, you know, X amount of hours a week with our personal lives, and we take time away from that to bring music to other people.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And yeah, you know, not many people get to experience that.
Absolutely. So I wanted to talk as well about the fact that you guys as a band over the years have kind of had a few kind of guest spots on your various songs and things. So we've like Kid Cookie, 10656 even. I wanted to kind of ask, how does that kind of thing happen? Did you reach out to them? Do they reach out to you? How does that all kind of all work? Or is it just a case you're all mates? And how does that all happen?
Yeah, I mean, mostly we're all mates. The music industry is a small world.
For sure.
I mean, particularly the metal scene. We, you know, you tour together, or you've been in bands before, or you play the same festival and you're just hanging out, you know.
Yeah,
I think we treat, the way we treat features, we want to get people on that would benefit the track, obviously, but we want to get mates on so it feels a bit better, you know, it feels a bit more personable maybe.
Mm-hmm.
At least to us it does. It feels a bit less of a money grab, you know. I know,
yeah, of course,
in certain worlds people are charging thousands for a small feature, you know, 8 or 16 bars, and it's not something we'd ever look to do. I see the benefits, but it's all about getting our mates on and, you know, collaborating with friends, because that's what we love doing.
And that's the thing as well. I don't mean this in any kind of slight to anyone who's in a band. But again, just purely as a music fan, when I see a Hacktivist song with Kid Bookie, I'm like, fuck yeah, that's going to be great, right? And then, for example, Kid Bookie got like a reasonable amount of time on the track, so I'm like, this is sick. But sometimes you listen to bands and they'll have featuring artists and they're like maybe for 30 seconds at the very end, and it's like a scream or a sing or whatever. And I'm like, oh, like, you had so much potential to do so much more with that thing. But again, that's coming from a selfish music listener point of view. But I think it's important to shine a light and say, you know, you guys always do kind of do it for the benefit of the track, but also it is kind of like, this is cool, but also, oh, Kid Bookie's fucking sick. Because I didn't know who Kid Bookie was until I listened to that track, and I was like, this is fucking sick. Now I'm a Kid Bookie fan. Do you know what I mean? So it is wicked for that kind of exposure, as well as kind of just having your mates and bringing them along for the ride.
Yeah, I mean, it's really tempting for us to try and pursue just getting our favourite bands or favourite artists to collaborate with us. But I mean, for one, it would be expensive. But
yeah, for sure.
Secondly, yeah, we've just got so many friends that we love what they're doing as well. They're, you know, we've got, I think our next song has got a feature on that's really cool. And we're definitely going to be looking to do more.
Absolutely. Love that. I love that. I wanted to talk about tour life and touring in general, because you guys are headlining Mangata Festival in, is it July or June? I can't remember. I've not written it down my notes. In any case, it's on the
internet. I don't think that far ahead either.
Yeah. Go and look at it on the internet. It's all there. But yeah, I kind of wanted to ask, how do you kind of, as a band, prepare for tour, for stage? What's kind of like going? So I always like to ask, sort of like the 20 minutes before you hit the stage, what's going on personally with you, with the band? Are you coming together? Are you sort of having time in your own little bubble and kind of doing your thing and then coming together? How does that all kind of work? And what's the mood like?
I think earlier in the day, we're probably all doing our own thing. A lot of us, you know, we might go off into our into groups and wander off into town. We're always really keen to, when we travel, to make the most of the time, no matter how tired we are, and go for a walk or, you know, find something to see or do wherever we are. You know, it's classic that bands go to these incredible places and just sit in the bus.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But, you know, we get to maybe 20 minutes before the show when we're all having a few drinks and, you know, enjoying the atmosphere and picking each other up a little bit, you know, getting the energy up. Usually a lot of drink is involved.
Yeah, for sure. Are you
we're still
a
party? Kids. Yeah.
You're still a party band. Love that. Love that.
Yeah, only really when we're on tour.
For sure. For sure.
Only really.
That's the thing. If you look at it from, and I use quotation marks saying a normal kind of job in terms of like a 9-to-5 that isn't, you know, a band as well, it's kind of like what you, because you, as we alluded to, you are, you know, doing a day job as well. It's kind of like when you're taking time for the band, it's kind of like you are kind of on your actual holiday from your main job. So having a drink and having a pie, it just kind of makes sense. You know, people go to Alicante and whatever and pissed up on a beach. It's no different. You're just doing it in Brighton on them with your bandmates.
Yeah, we just want to bring a party to other people as well. If we're not excited and having a great time, then how, no one else is going to be having a great time either if the band they're watching look bored. I mean, to each their own. There are obviously bands you go and see where you're focused solely on how incredible they are. We would rather drop 10% of our, you know, playing ability to add an extra 50% of the performance.
I mean, when you're playing that, you know, 8-string monstrosity of a guitar that you play, you know, like, you know, 10% is nothing. It's all good. I will say, well, I mean, you to.
I always spot my mistakes, but I feel like maybe I'm being too critical.
Absolutely, absolutely. So this is a question I've kind of introduced to this year, and it's a question which there's only one wrong answer, and the wrong answer is your passport. What is one thing you can't live without whilst on tour? And your passport's a cop out, so you don't have to.
I'm not going to say passport. headphones, definitely. I mean,
okay, nice.
You spend a lot of time around these people, and they are my best friends. They really are. But you know, time to unwind is really, really important. Listen to a lot of podcasts. So yeah, probably that combination. You know, my phone and my headphones, or maybe I could say my laptop, because we're always trying to write on tour as well.
For sure, for sure.
Maybe not doing the best job, but we try.
I've got a couple of final questions for you. One of which is a question I've asked every single artist who I had on the show in 2023, and I'm continuing it into 2024, because I spoke to my wife to be, and I was like, should we do it? She's like, no, do it, keep it. I was like, fine, fine. You got James from Hacktivist. I was like, all right, okay, fine, calm down. Literally, that's how she said it. so basically, when Spotify or Apple or Amazon or one of these big corporate companies buys this podcast from me, I'm going to have lots of lovely corporate sponsor money for the podcast, right? Now, most normal people would reinvest it back in the show. I'm saying, no, 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 fuck that. I've done nearly 500 of these episodes. What I'm going to do instead is I'm going to throw one big giant festival, right? Hacktivists are invited to play along with all the other bands who've been on the show. It's going to be a lovely, long, eclectic, probably like a week-long bill at this point. But what I would like to know, on behalf of Hacktivist, what would you like to add to the Dream Rider of the festival? Now, there's two things to bear in mind, James. You've got no financial limitations. You could have whatever your heart desires, right? And also, space is not a problem. If you, so we've had people say to me, I want like, you know, a swimming pool. I want like roller coaster rides. We've had some bizarre ones, I'll be honest. I had someone say to me, I want Taylor Swift just sort of branding around. I'm like, fair enough. I've had people say like really weirdly like specific things of like, there was like what I had a Norwegian band on, they wanted a specific brand of Norwegian energy drink. It's like, yeah, fine. Folk artist Beans on Toast said to me he just wants to turn up, and I was like, well, you've kind of squandered your opportunity to have whatever you want, but there we go. What would you like to add?
I think I would like to add a racetrack with cars provided.
Nice.
I think that would be fun.
Okay,
that would
so
be fun. I'm big into cars.
Nice. Are we talking like, okay, so I'm assuming when you say cars, we're talking like Nuremberg style, like rally kind of setup with just like conventional cars? Or are we talking more like F1 type cars? What? Talk to me a little bit.
Yeah, just, you know, anything quick that I can drive would be good. I'd like a rally car. I'd like a supercar.
Nice, nice.
Whatever. But if there was a racetrack to have some fun on before playing a show, I think that would be really great. Maybe we'll have the drinks afterwards. But
yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah.
You knew you dug yourself a hole then.
Fooled you. I did.
I got a ladder. It's all good. I love it. I've got one final question for you, James. And I'm so, so grateful for your time on this very early Thursday morning. And it's a very simple one. It's a question I've asked every single artist who's been on the show in the last 4 years. And it's a moderately simple one, but it's personal to you. What is the best thing about being in a band for you, James, of Hacktivist?
Being in a band for me, it's difficult. You know, I should say friendship with these guys, because no matter when the band comes to an end, you know, I've made brothers for life, absolutely. But I think it's maybe having a creative outlet. I don't know what I would do without it.
For sure.
I think the ability to create something and put it out there and people listen to it, I think is the best feeling.
I love that. I love that. And so a final aside question, is there anything that we need to talk about? Anything you'd like to plug, promote? Obviously, Mangata Festival is the only one that springs to the top of my head that you're headlining. Is there anything else in the works that we can look forward to?
Crooks and Criminals has been out for a couple of weeks. We have another song dropping in a week.
Amazing.
So 7 days.
That'll probably be out now as people listen to this, roughly.
Okay, cool.
If you don't want to tell too much, because I know how these things work, but yeah, it should be out in about, what we say, Friday? Or it's going to be Friday tomorrow.
Okay.
It's going to be out probably Wednesday next week. So it's coming out very, very soon. Yeah.
Okay, then in terms of the podcast, this song will be out tomorrow.
Yeah, nice.
And it's a cover.
Amazing.
And we've got maybe 12 or 13 other tracks that we're going to drop throughout the year.
Oh, amazing.
So keep listening.
Lovely job. Lovely job. Stoked for it. James, thank you so much for taking the time, buddy. And this has been great, very fun. I hope
My
you
pleasure.
Yourself.
Thank you.
We shall catch you on the road. And I always say, they make a point of saying this, if we catch each other on the road, I'll buy you a beverage of your choice as a thank you, because I appreciate it. And let's hang out at a festival or a gig very, very soon.
Absolutely, man. Lovely to meet you.
Lovely. Well, speak soon, everybody. Catch you up soon.
See